Chapter 6, The Rise of Islam. Muhammad's Vision. Far, far away from Rome and from Constantinople, a hot, dry desert lay under the blazing sun. This desert, on the Arabian Peninsula, has water on three sides of it. But even though water is all around it, the Arabian Peninsula is parched and sandy. During the day, the sun beats down on the desert with blistering heat. Sand blows through the air. Sometimes the blowing sand is so thick that you can hardly breathe. Little clumps of palm trees dot the burning sand. The clumps are called oases. If you dig deep enough, you can find water in an oasis, but not very much. A desert is a hard and dangerous place to live, but strong, determined tribes of people called Bedouins managed to live in the Arabian Peninsula and even build cities there. One of these cities was called Mecca. Over 1,000 years ago, an orphan boy named Muhammad lived in Mecca. He lived with his grandfather and uncle. Although they had little money, Muhammad learned that a Bedouin should always help the poor, give food and lodging to strangers if they needed it, and take care of the sick. He helped his uncle herd his flocks of sheep. He worked hard. Soon he became known as El Amin, which means the trustworthy one. But when Muhammad looked around him, he saw other Bedouins treating the poor and sick badly. The men around him drank too much. They gambled their money away instead of buying food for their children, and they worshipped many different idols. Muhammad spent more and more time alone. He liked to go into the desert away from the crowded, noisy city of Mecca, to think and pray in a dark, quiet cave. He wondered, what would make men change their ways? How could they become better? One day, something odd happened to Muhammad in his quiet cave. Here is the story as Muhammad's followers tell it. Muhammad sat alone in his cave. The sun had set. The hot desert sand was cooling in the night air. A breeze blew gently into the cave. He closed his eyes. Silence was all around him. Suddenly he heard a faint musical sound. It grew louder and louder, as though bells were ringing all around him. He opened his eyes, but he could see nothing but rock and sand. Then a voice came out of the darkness. "Read," it ordered. "But I can't read," Muhammad cried out. "Read," the voice repeated. Suddenly, Muhammad saw a silk scroll floating in the air. Words were written on it in letters of fire. And although Muhammad had never learned how to read, suddenly he knew what the words said. Terrified, Muhammad ran out into the desert. But the voice spoke to him again. "Muhammad," it said. "Muhammad, you are the messenger of Allah, the one true God, and I am the angel Gabriel." Muhammad looked up. Above him he saw the angel Gabriel, like a huge shining man with his feet set on the edge of the sky. Light came pouring down from Gabriel, and as Muhammad watched, Gabriel disappeared into the sky. What do you think Muhammad did next? Muhammad flees to Medina. After his vision, Muhammad ran home. He told his wife and his family what had happened to him. "The most important thing I have learned," he said, "is that all of these idols the Bedouins worship are false. There is only one God, and he is called Allah." "You are a prophet," Muhammad's wife exclaimed. She believed Muhammad's story. So did Muhammad's cousin, his servant, and three others. These six people were the first Muslims. Muhammad's teachings became known as Islam, and those who followed his teachings were called Muslims. At first, Muhammad only talked about Allah to these six followers. But after several years went by, he began preaching to others in Mecca. He walked through the city proclaiming, "There is only one true God, and his name is Allah. He created the universe, and he rules it. At the day of judgment, Allah will look at your life and reward or punish you. So share with the poor. Don't be greedy and spend all your time trying to make money. Stop worshiping idols. Only worship Allah." Many poor people in Mecca liked what Muhammad was saying, but the rich people were worried when they heard his teachings. "Share our money with the poor," they said to each other. "We don't want to do that. And what will happen if people stop believing in the idols of Mecca? They won't come here to the city to worship anymore. They won't buy food and drink or special clothes to wear at the temple. We won't make any more money selling these things." So the rich and powerful people of Mecca started to persecute the poor slaves and workers who had converted to Islam. They threw stones at them, forced them to leave the city, or put them in jail. And no one would sell food to Muhammad and his family. He had to send friends to buy food secretly. They brought the food to his house in the middle of the night so that no one would see them. Things in Mecca grew worse and worse for Muslims. Soon, more and more Muslims began to leave the city. They went to a nearby city, Medina, which welcomed them. The leaders of Medina even invited Muhammad to come and preach to them. "Come to Medina," they told him, "and we will promise to worship only Allah. We won't steal anymore or tell lies. We'll do anything that you tell us." Muhammad would rather have stayed in Mecca. He didn't want to leave his home, but most of his followers had gone. Soon he and one friend, Abu Bakr, were the only Muslims left in the city. One night, Muhammad and his friend, Abu Bakr, were sitting in Muhammad's home, eating their supper, when someone hammered frantically at the door. "Muhammad," the visitor hissed, "Muhammad, you must let me in." Muhammad went to the door. He peered out, but he didn't recognize the man who stood there. "Who are you?" he asked. "A friend," the stranger answered. "There is a plot to kill you. The leaders of the town are sending soldiers right now to murder you in your home. If you want to live, leave Mecca at once." And then he slipped away into the night. Muhammad and Abu Bakr left their plates and cups on the table and ran. They hurried through the dark, empty streets of Mecca to the city gates. As they ran, they heard shouting behind them. The soldiers had found Muhammad's house empty. "Quick," Muhammad said, "to the mountains. We'll hide in a cave there." They hurried down the road, hearing the soldiers behind them. Soon they found a small dark cave and crept into it. They waited there, hardly breathing, hoping that the soldiers would pass them by. Muslims say that when the soldiers got to the cave, they paused, wondering whether to search it or not. Then one of them noticed a spider web stretching all across the cave's front. He poked at it. The strands were thick and old, covered with dust, and flies were caught in it. "Look," he said, "this spider web has been here for days. If Muhammad and Abu Bakr had gone into this cave, they would have broken the web. They can't be here." So the soldiers moved on. When Muhammad and Abu Bakr finally came out of the cave, the soldiers had passed them by. They traveled to Medina, 200 miles away. When the Muslims of Medina heard that Muhammad the Prophet was arriving, they poured out of the city to greet him, cheering and praising Allah. Muhammad's journey from Mecca to Medina has a special name, the Hejra. The Hejra is so important to Muslims that they count their years beginning from the Hejra. Do you remember what B.C. and B.C.E. mean? They mean before Christ or before the Common Era. And A.D. and C.E. both tell us that a date came after the birth of Christ. For Christians, the year Jesus was born is the first year of the new calendar. So the year A.D. 2000 came 2,000 years after the birth of Jesus. But Muslims don't count their years from the birth of Jesus. Instead, they count their years from the Hejra. So the year that Muhammad went from Mecca to Medina is called A.H.1, or the first year after the Hejra. The Quran, Islam's holy book. Muhammad stayed in Medina for many years. He went on teaching his followers about Allah. He taught them to be loyal to each other, to be generous to those with less money, and to treat their wives and families well. He also told them that they shouldn't drink any alcohol, gamble, or mistreat their slaves. Not all of Muhammad's followers could read, so they would carefully memorize his teachings word for word. Other Muslims wrote these sayings down on whatever they could find, bits of paper, pieces of leather, even palm leaves. Finally, Muhammad's friend Abu Bakr decided that all Muhammad's words should be gathered together in one place. He ordered Muhammad's followers to bring him every single word spoken by Muhammad. "Bring every word," he said, "whether it is written on leaves, bits of leather, bones, pieces of stone, or simply written in your mind." All of these scattered teachings were written down in a single book. Then, the bits and scraps were destroyed. Now, all of Muhammad's teachings could be found in one place. Today, we call this book the Quran. It is the holy book of Muslims all over the world. The Quran tells Muslims that their lives are built on five pillars. The five pillars are the five duties every Muslim should do. The Quran says that a life built on five pillars is a strong, good life. Here are the five pillars of Islam. Each pillar has a special name. First pillar, Shahada, or faith. Each Muslim must believe that Allah is the one true God. Muslims say, "There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet." They say this to each newborn baby, before praying, and at other special times every day. Second pillar, Salah, or prayer. Muslims pray to Allah five times every day. Before the prayer, they must wash themselves, put on clean clothes, and face towards the city of Mecca. Muslim children are expected to begin praying when they are 7. By the time they are 10, they too must pray 5 times every day. Third pillar, zakat, or giving. Muslims must give away part of their money every year to those who need help. Fourth pillar, psalm, or fasting. During 1 month of the year called Ramadan, Muslims do not eat or drink anything all day long. They can only eat and drink before the sun comes up and after the sun sets at night. Young children don't have to fast, but by the time Muslim children are 10 years old, they must fast during Ramadan, just like grown-ups. Going without food is supposed to remind Muslims of those who are poor and suffer from hunger all the time. Fifth pillar, Hajj, or pilgrimage. Every Muslim tries to go to Mecca at least once during his or her life. Mecca is a very important city to Muslims because Muhammad had his first vision there. Do you think the five pillars are difficult? Do they help people to live good lives?